This morning, I want you to use your minds. I want to approach it the biblical way. Reach your hearts through your minds. If you don't, you usually get off in heresy and wrong thinking. So take what I say and weigh it and evaluate it. And you grandparents here need to take this very seriously. Yesterday, we did a seminar, and it was so well done, on apologetics and truth. But there was one thing left out that I didn't bring up because I was speaking here this morning. With our young people, we are facing challenges like we never dreamed of. One is epistemology. Say, what in the world is that? Epistemology, we get the word epistle, comes from the study of truth and the source of truth. What is truth? Has gone through a total change, a complete total change. I called my son, who is my sounding board, about 9 months ago. I said, Sean, I've been a researcher for 55 years. And I believe this is the first time in history with the same sex gender debate that feelings has trumped science. That feelings has trumped truth. That feelings has trumped fact. And there was a little bit of pause, and my son said, Dad, you're right. We've had a whole shift from truth to feelings in the generation of 21 years old and younger. Second, we face an information glut with the internet. I spoke on that in the last time I was here briefly. Our kids are overwhelmed. The average adolescent today takes into their mind through a moving screen 2.2 million pages of data every day. And we wonder why they have an 8-second time span, attention span. They've been overloaded. How do we as parents, as grandparents, as a church, how do we rise above all that noise to get their attention, to get their focus, and make a difference? Then the third thing I just touched on last time I was here, and point now it's quadrupled, is the issue of pervasive internet pornography. It's killing us. It is killing us. And one of the top major evangelical missionary groups in the world, since January 1, they've had 276 applications for staff. Now, folks, this is the most evangelistic Bible-centered group you can imagine. It's huge. But in these 276 applicants of some of the top young people from seminaries, everything, that applied for their staff, 99% of the men, 80% of the women pursue pornography in the internet. Do you get that, folks? It's no different for any other organization in the world. 99% of the men applying for staff, 80% of the women pursue pornography in the internet. If we're going to have an impact on our children, our young people, there's a bottom line that with absolute confidence I can say is the foundation. And I want to do it in the light of a pyramid, a graphic, a pyramid. I try to figure out what causes a young person to want to believe. After 55, 56 years now in the ministry, what would cause your children, your grandchildren to want to know your Savior? To follow your scriptures, to live out your values. We are the first generation in the history of America, everything shows it, we have not passed our faith on to the next generation. We're the first ones. And it's true in almost every country of the world. How do we pass our faith on? Well, this pyramid represents the making of an individual. At the top, you have one's behavior. That's what you see when you look at a young person. That's kind of like the iceberg. When you see a huge iceberg, you see a small part of it above the waterline. It's what you can see. But the massive part is underneath. When you look at a young person, You see that little part called behavior, but what's the massive part underneath that reflects that behavior, that initiates that behavior? Well, what motivates our behavior, drives our behavior? It's our values. Folks, your values drive your behavior. Now the question is, what forms our values? It's our beliefs. I like to put it worldview. Somebody said, what's a worldview? It's how you view the world. Do you have a scientific viewpoint? Do you have an agnostic viewpoint? Do you have a biblically based viewpoint or what? Research shows that's the number one thing that affects change in a young person's life is a worldview. But what enhances a young person to believe? It took me about 12 years to really analyze it. And then I thought, why in the world did it take even 12 hours? What initiates belief? Our loving, intimate relationships. Relationships and genders, beliefs that forms our values, that drives our behavior. In Psalm 26:3, David said, for I am always aware of your unfailing love. Not once in a while, not a couple times a week. I'm constantly aware of your unfailing love. Notice what David said it did to him. And I have lived according to your truth. If David had not seen that unfailing love, and even then, he blew it, folks. You know it. But if he had not seen that unfailing love, he never, ever would have lived according to God's truth. In Psalm 86:11 is a prayer that David prayed that I think I can honestly say almost every single one of you here want your children, your grandchildren to sincerely pray this prayer. See if it's not true. When David prayed, teach me your ways, O Lord. Now why? Why teach me your ways? That I may live according to your truth. Isn't that what you want? Isn't that, somebody just shake their head. Good, I saw that lady shake her head. That's what we want for our grandchildren, our children. But what motivated David to pray that prayer? What will motivate your children, your grandchildren, to sincerely pray that prayer? It says, David said, for your love for me is very great. It's relationships that engenders beliefs, that forms our values, that drives our behavior. In Ephesians 4, it's something you want from your pastor with every guest speaker here. And I see you got Joel coming. Oh, folks, don't miss him. He's one of the most significant people you could listen to in the world. Especially about what's happening in the Middle East, everything else. This fellow is knowledgeable, and he's one good guy. But you want this when it says, speak the truth in love. Every guest speaker you have here, you want them to speak the truth. You want your youth pastor, you want Ted, others to speak the truth. But it says in love. Now be careful there. The in love does not make it true. You can speak truth in hatred. It's still true. Nobody will want it. What truth does is cultivates, what love does is cultivate the ground to receive the truth. Speak the truth in love. Love opens a door. Love engenders belief, a relationship. Here are three phrases that I developed to help me and guide me in raising my children. Three daughters and a son. Here's the one I'm probably known for all over the world. Rules without relationships lead to rebellion. Folks, kids don't respond to rules. Get real. They respond to rules in the context of a loving, intimate relationship. Somebody says to me, you say to anyone that speaks on parenting and ask him, well, what's the number one thing in parenting? They almost always hem and haw around. Boy, I don't. I blur it right out. Oh, very simple. Rules without relationships lead to rebellion, period. Then the second one, truth, the truth of the gospel, the truth of your values, everything. Truth without relationships leads to rejection, period. And this one in raising children, Discipline without relationships leads to anger, bitterness, and resentment. It's the relationship that engenders beliefs, that forms our values, that drives our behavior. As David said, "For I'm constantly aware of your unfailing love, and I have lived according to your truth." They did a major study because they knew parents, whether Christian or non-Christian, parents were fearful of losing their children morally, especially when they go off to the university. They had a fear of losing their children to peer pressure, society pressure, advertising, pressure of college, movies, the pressure of internet and gaming, and the pressure of pornography. And they wanted to find out, is there anything that overrides all these fears in a child's life? Is there anything a parent, a grandparent can do will override those fears? Is there anything that can trump all of these pressures in a young person's life? After millions of dollars spent, they found one thing, just one thing that will override these pressures, and that was a loving, intimate relationship with one's daddy, not the mother, the daddy. Dartmouth Medical School commissioned a scientific study to be done of young people. They didn't do any research. You say, that's really ridiculous. No, it was brilliant. What they did was take over 150 other scientific studies of young people and studied their research. And then they came out with, when they released it in a book, they changed the whole title from a scientific title to a relational title. Now, why in the world would a group of scientists change their study title from a scientific study, because that's what they're doing, to a relational study? They called it Hardwired to Connect. Hardwired to Connect. And what they concluded through 150 scientific studies of young people, human beings are biologically wired to form relationships at the moment of birth. Do you get that, folks? At the moment when a child is born, their brain, not spiritually, not emotionally, physically is wired to connect in relationships. And he went on to say, you want to impart your values, your truth, to your children, to your grandparents, a teacher to a classroom, a business owner to his employees? You want to impart truth? This is what they said. You must do two things. One, develop a loving, intimate relationship with that child or that person. If this is science speaking, you want to pass truth on, develop a loving, intimate relationship. Intimacy has nothing to do with sex, folks. Intimacy means no facade, no barrier. In other words, being real. A relationship that is real is what an intimate relationship means. No barrier, no facade. You get what you see. One, you must develop a loving, intimate connection or relationship with that child. Second, you must model the very truth or value you want to impart into that child's life. Whoa! As Jesus said, I have given you an example to follow. Do as I have done to you. Or as Paul said, I have given you an example to follow. Do as I have done to you. Folks, hear me, especially with Generation Z, and there are not many millennials, folks. Get that out of your mind. There's a greater distance between Generation Z, 21 years old and younger, and millennials than any two generations in the history of America. There are not many millennials. They're totally different. But with Generation Z and younger, mom, dad, if they don't see it, why in the world should they want it? When it comes just to your faith, if your children don't want what you have, then why should they love your Jesus? Because you talk about Jesus all the time, and they will believe well, if I love Jesus, then I'll have what my mom and dad have, and I don't like what they have in their marriage or in their lives. Why should I read their Bible? Because if I read their Bible, I'll have what mom has or dad has, and I don't like what they have. You know, I don't blame them. I don't blame them. Pretty much scientists saying, if they don't see it, they won't believe it. They did a study. Johns Hopkins Medical School. Well, no. Another study was done by Columbia University. They wanted to find out how the family structure between a single parent family headed by a mother and a two-parent biological family affects a child's involvement in drugs, alcohol, and extrapolated out to violence. And this is what they found. Children raised in a single parent home where the mother is the head, now get this, is 30% more likely to go into drugs, alcohol, and violence. Now, folks, in research, that's one high percentage. But get this, a child raised in a two-parent biological home, but there's a fair to poor relationship with a father, that child is 68% more likely to go into drugs, alcohol, and violence in a two-parent biological home, but a fair to poor relationship with a father. Do you know what it is for a child raised in a two-parent biological home and there's a good to excellent relationship with a father? This is incredible. They're 6% less likely to ever go into drugs, alcohol, and violence. Now, why wouldn't that be true? If science shows that the moment a child is born, they're born biologically to connect in relationships. And if those relationships aren't there, why wouldn't you see the manifestation around them? You do. The FBI commissioned a study to be done after the shootings at Columbine a number of years ago. They studied the two shooters at Columbine, the 15 shooters before then. They wanted to come up with a profile to help teachers, administrators, and police to detect potential shooters. It was called the Classroom Avenger Profile. The Classroom Avenger Profile. The FBI concluded that there were three main ingredients in a profile. One, they're all white. So I say to my African-American friends, I'm sorry you don't fit the, what do you call it, profile. They're all white. Second, they're all middle class. Not poor, not wealthy. How much, so much of this, people just write off, well, poverty, poor, the economics. And he said, no. Every single shooter, middle class. But the third one was a gripper. The father, this is the same thing true in Parkland, everywhere. The father was either absent, not, or non-involved in the parenting process. You know what that does? That qualifies probably 80% of all kids that attend evangelical churches in America. They fit the profile for a shooter. They're white, middle class, and distant from their father. They're potential shooters. After Parkland, you wonder if the FBI reads their own research. No wonder David said, I've been constantly aware of your unfailing love, and I have lived according to your truth. Johns Hopkins Medical School commissioned a study to be done by two doctors, Dwazinski and Thomas, to study 1,377 graduates of Johns Hopkins Medical School for 30 years. Whoa, think of that. Think of what that costs. Following 1,377 graduates for 30 years. They wanted to see if they could find a predictive factor to look at a child and say, when this child grows up, they have a greater propensity for a number of illnesses in their life. In other words, can they look at a child and say, if this is true in a child's life, when they get older, they're off the charts for five things. One, mental illness. Talk about that in Parkland. Second, hypertension. Third, malignant tumors. Fourth, coronary heart disease. Fifth, suicide. Can they look at a child and say, if this is true in a child's life, when they grow up, it doesn't mean they're going to have any of these five things, but they're off the charts in a propensity to have these five things. They only found one factor. After 30 years of research, when they released an American JAMA, Journal of American Medical Association, they only found one factor. And that was this. It wasn't your diet. Thank you, Jesus. It wasn't your exercise. To God be the glory. You know what it was? The lack of a loving, close relationship to one's parents, especially the father. I thought, this is crazy. No way. Science has gone too far. So I called John Hopkins, and they couldn't answer it for me, so they gave me one of the researchers. It took him 3 minutes to convince me why this is true. The relationship of the parents, especially the father. For this reason, there's something that's true in every person's life in the world. It's true in every one of your lives. You just experience to a different level. And maybe you've learned to control it to a different level. It's called stress. And this is what they found out. That a child raised in a very loving home, especially in the relationship of the father, as that child grows up, they can handle stress so much better in their lives. It's relationships. It's relationships. Stress and conflict with the parents are number one. Men who say they had a good relationship with their father while growing up react less to day-to-day stress as adults. It's relationships. Sons with good relationship fathers were better at handling stress, according to a major study by Colorado State University. Dr. Matthew Anderson said the key takeaway is that without adequate parent-child relationship quality to match socioeconomic advantage during childhood may not offer much protection at all against the chronic disease of childhood as children become adults in middle age. It's relationships. My daughter, we always pulled our kids out of school. By the time they graduated from high school, they'd been in about 35 countries. And I'd get criticism. People would hear me say that. Well, you're not thinking of your child, they're educated. Look, my first three were all valedictorian, so don't tell me it hurt their education. They've gone on, got PhD, medical doctors, everything else. So don't tell me it hurt their education. Their time with their dad was as important as their time in the classroom. They got their assignments done before any other kid that went to school every day. And my Katie, my third child, came to me. We had just moved to Texas from California, which don't ask me why, but anyway. She came home from school. She said, Daddy, there's a girl at school who is so smart. She's so much smarter than I am, Daddy. But I'm 1/10 of a percentage point ahead of her to be valedictorian. But Daddy, she's so much smarter than I am, but I'm going to be valedictorian. I said, isn't it a little obnoxious? Unless it's true. If it's true, it's not obnoxious. No, I'm serious. And I said, well, how can you say that? I said, because you and Mom. I said, what do you mean? I said, Jennifer's folks, they're not divorced, but they fight all the time. She'll break down crying at school. She can't focus. She can't study. She doesn't want to go home. She says, Dad, you and Mom love each other. When I come home, it's like an island of peace in my world, which it should be for a child. Well, she became valedictorian. And I don't care what anyone says, relationships had a major part to do with it. It's relationships that engenders beliefs, that forms our values, that drives our behavior. You take a 12 to 14-year-old teen without a close relationship with their father, 300% more likely to attempt suicide? Folks, that is huge. But you take a 15 to 16-year-old that doesn't have a close living relationship with their dad, is 400% more likely. Almost everything you study about young people comes down to relationships, and you've never heard that once in the whole discussion about the shootings at Parkland. So many are like Lindsay Lohan, the singer in Trouble. Same thing that affected her affected Paris Hilton, Britney Spears, all of them. She wrote a song. The lyrics go like this, called The Confession of a Broken Heart. I wear all your old clothes, your polo sweater. Can you speed up the PowerPoint a little bit? It's always way behind me. I dream of another, thank you, of another you, the one who would never leave me alone to pick up the pieces. A daddy to hold me, that's what I needed. It's relationships. When I think how many even Christian young people feel the same way as Lindsay Lohan felt. I'm left to pick up the pieces. Look at Michael Jackson, the king of pop. Probably one of the most famous singers in all of history and one of the best to me. You understand his bizarre behavior, his lawsuit, everything else. Take one long look at his daddy. When he was 5 years old, his parents formed the Jackson Five. Can you imagine the most powerful music group in history, and the lead singer was 5 years old? The first year after that, he was six. In their first rehearsal, something went wrong. And five-year-old Jackson, Michael, turned around to his father and said, Daddy! And Michael said, my father stopped the rehearsal immediately in a stern voice. He said, I am not your father. I am your manager. And don't you ever forget that. And Michael said, I've never forgotten it to this day. He was speaking at Oxford University before about 800 students and professors. And out of nowhere, about 7 minutes into his talk, he started to weep. And he cried so hard he couldn't speak. The professors, students, of course, like most men, they felt very uneasy. Men don't feel comfortable around that. Felt very uneasy and everything else. And then out of nowhere, Michael Jackson, the king of pop, said, I just wanted a dad, a father who showed me love, and my father never did that. He never once said, Michael, I love you. You see, Michael Jackson never had that opportunity to see that unfailing love. So it was hard for him, not impossible, but very difficult, not just to know truth, but to live it out. He shared, or somebody else shared about him, that when he came out with his album, The Thrill, which I still think is one of the greatest albums ever produced, when he came out with The Thriller, number one album in the world, everything, night after night, at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, he'd go out and walk the streets of Beverly Hills and Hollywood and walk up to total strangers and ask them, would you be my friend? That just breaks my heart. I wish to God I'd been on one of those streets that he'd come up to me. And I could have thrown my arms around and said, yes, Michael, let's go get a cup of coffee and mentor him. Will you be my friend? Do you know how many people, especially Gen Z, 21 years old and younger, crying that out? The Gen Z and mental health are off the charts. They are off the charts in mental health. They're off, way off the charts in depression and loneliness. Straight across. And a number of reasons for that. Christian and non-Christian, the same thing. I was in Phoenix, Arizona. It was in October, beautiful time, and I did 13 high school assemblies from Monday to Friday. Now, folks, no man in their sane mind would ever attempt that. You'd have to be mentally ill. The second one was Monday at noon. It was about 1,500 students and teachers outdoors on a section of grass, almost like this, about this size, slanted up slightly. At the bottom were two huge rocks or two small boulders. I like that because you could stand on it, stand on one of them, because it's hard to hold attention when there's so many distractions outside. As they were introducing me, 1,500 students out, the principal leaned over and whispered in my ear, "Oh, by the way, Dr. McDowell, there's a group of goths on campus who'll come to break up the assembly and will literally physically try to throw you off campus." He said they do it all the time. We kick them out of school, they come back, they do it again. We kick them out of school, they come back, we do it again. You know, you'd think somebody would smarten up. Folks, please don't say the school. Please say the parents. Amen. Ought to smarten up. You want some advice? I know you don't, but I'll give you some advice on raising children in school. Almost never, ever, 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 ever reinforce your child's behavior at school when the teacher sends him to the principal. Because even your precious little daughter and son, they are brats. And these moms go down there and dads. And they are, look, I got three teachers in my family. It's pathetic. Especially Christian moms. They go down, "My daughter couldn't have done that. My son couldn't have done that." Yeah, he probably did. And what you're doing is rewarding poor behavior that will come back to nip you. The teacher is almost always right. And that was even true of my kids. I know it's hard to believe. I think only one time did I ever defend my kids at school. And I thank God I was right. And I was right in all the times I didn't. The teachers are usually right. I like what Trump said the other day. He said the teachers love their students. They care about their students almost more than anyone else in life. That's why my wife and I supported teachers. They had a birthday, we threw the party. They needed a teacher's room painted, we painted it. They needed a sound system, we raised the money. Just because you pay taxes doesn't give you any right to go down and chew out a teacher or a principal. You earn the right to do that. And if you're not involved in those kids' education at school, then keep your big mouth shut. It's relationships that affects it. And so when I got up to speak, I wasn't speaking more than 50 seconds, and up came four goths. They stood about from here to those plants, so even closer than that, and they looked scary. They were all dressed in black. Deep black mascara makeup. Every hair on their head was some color. Every part of their body, which is unusual for a goth, a punk, no. Every part of their body that was not tattooed was pierced. They had big chains around their neck. The head had a huge iron cross. And they stood about that far away while I was speaking and said, "I dare you. I love that. I would pay people to dress that way and be there." Not one kid left that assembly. Don't tell me kids can't hold it. They never went potty. They wanted to find out what's going to happen to the teacher. I did too. I wanted to go potty, but anyway. So I changed my talk. They didn't know it. To talk about intimacy that every kid wants. Intimacy means to be real. No facade, no bear. To be real. That's what every kid wants with daddy, with mommy. Just be real. If you blow it, mommy, confess it. Dad, if you blow it, claim it. And so since they set me up, I really bent every rule about talking about Jesus. You thought I was at Olive Baptist. I laid it out there. They were more scared of me than the punks at that time. When I finished, I stepped down off the boulder, and the moment my foot hit the ground, the head of the goss leaped towards me. 1,500 students went, "Oh!" And he came up within 6 inches of my nose. I remember it well because he had buffalo breath. And it was all I could do to keep from laughing. And I don't feel bad about it. I didn't laugh, but oh, I wanted to. He was crying, and all of his mascara was running. And then he'd take his hand like this, and he literally looked like camouflage going into battle. It really was humorous in a sad way. And he came up. 1,500 students and teachers didn't hear him say, very politely, "Mr. McDowell, would you give me a hug?" Before I could even say yes, this kid grabbed me, pinned my arms to my side, put his head on my right, in front of the whole school, folks, put his head on my right shoulder and cried like a baby. It seemed like it lasted forever because his chains were embedded into my chest. Now, I'm not joking, they were. And when he stepped back, what 1,500 didn't ever hear, and if any of you men go to make some dumb, stupid, idiotic, condescending remark about the way some kids' pants are down to his crack, the way some kids are all tattooed in their hair and their clothes, and you go to make some dumb, stupid remark, men, and think you're so spiritual when you're so carnal. You think the next time you want to make any remark like that, especially to your own children, which is idiotic, you remember what this young man said to me, because it's true of almost every one of them like that. He said, "Mr. McDowell, my father never once gave me a hug or told me he loved me." He just wanted to be loved. And I'll guarantee you that shooter in Parkland wanted to be loved. It's relationships that engenders beliefs that forms. God made us that way. From the moment of birth, we're wired to connect in relationships. In raising my children, whenever I saw something in their life, a wrong behavior, maybe an attitude, a belief or something, that as an involved dad, I had to step in and correct it. But before I ever did, I always tried to ask my children 3 questions, whether my 3 daughters and my son. And if my children answered yes to these 3 questions, that made parenting fun. You can mold them like clay in a potter's hand. But if they hesitated on any one of these or said no, I was in trouble. Didn't mean I couldn't impact them, but so much harder and takes all the joy out of it. The first question, "Son, do you know that I love you?" "Yeah, Dad." "Son, do you know that I love your mother?" "Yeah, Dad." "Son, when you get married, do you want to have love, marriage, and sex and a family like what I have with your mother and your kids?" "Yeah, Dad." "Then, son, stop doing that. That will rob you of everything you want. Now, son, this is why God says da-da-da-da-da-da-da." Do you notice the uniqueness of those 3 questions? They had nothing to do with content or substance. Men don't know it, so ladies, tell me what those 3 questions have to do with. Relationships. Relationships. My relationship with them, my relationship with their mother, and my relationship with them as a family. And what I learned as a daddy, if I wanted to really impact my children, I needed to surface the relationship with them that I did through these questions, and then deal with that problem, that attitude, that behavior in the context of the relationship. Oh, folks, it doesn't mean you're going to get everything you want, but I'll guarantee you, it changes lives. It's relationships that engenders the beliefs, that forms our values, that drives our behavior. And one of the biggest things that helped me was before I had children in the university, very fightingly, begrudgingly, I came into a relationship with God Yahweh through His Son, Jesus Christ. I wrote the book that Ted was holding up here, which is a brand new out, revised by 70% new. I started out to initially write that book years ago to make a joke of Christianity. I figured Christians had two brains. One was lost, the other was out looking for it. I really believed that a Christian had a brain that died in isolation. Look, I'd met some. And after most Christians, a five-minute conversation, I concluded that. They're out to lunch. Why? Well, the biggest barriers to me coming to Christ, same problem today, every Christian, every pastor, every parent, every Christian kid could tell me what I ought to believe. None of them could give me any intelligent reason why I ought to believe it. I think that's about the dumbest thing in the world. I really do, folks. To believe something, not even know why intellectually you believe it. That's why I was so excited to be at the seminar yesterday. I wish every person in this community could have been there. Because probably 95% of Christians can't give any intelligent reason why they believe the Bible's true, Jesus, Son of God, or the resurrection ever happened. Look, I've tested it for years. So I set out to write a book against it, found out I was the ignorant one. So after traveling all the way through the United States, England, Germany, France, Switzerland, the Middle East, to gather evidence to write that book to refute Christianity and those students and professors that were Christians at the university, I became a Christian. Spent 13 years documenting why. That relationship with Him, as I started to grow in it, I was mentored in it by the man that led me to Christ. I started to see the model of raising my children and my children raising my grandchildren. I saw a true love relationship with God the Father through His Son, Jesus Christ.